This episode of Standard Orbit is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your tablet, smartphone, and desktop. Support the show and get a free audiobook of your choice by visiting audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Hey everyone, I'm Rod Roddenberry, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Follow the Standard Orbit, Mr. Chekhov, and take us home.
Hi, sir.
It is the word of Landru.
Joy to you, friends, and thanks for joining us here in Standard Orbit, Trek FM's dedicated show to the original series. My name is Drew, or Landru, and this is my co-host Mike from Commentary Trek Stars.
Hey.
Hey, Mike.
Hey.
And today, we're going to talk about... We're going to finish up, I guess, the SO canon. We're going to skip over TAS. I'm sorry, I didn't finish watching it. We're just going to assume that yesteryear is the only thing we're going to keep.
Yeah. Yesteryear belongs in the canon. Better than most episodes of the original series. Everything else, crap.
And it has pet death, which makes me cry. And if your crappy 70s cartoon can make me weep like a little baby, I will gladly insert it into my canon.
Yes. Anything that makes Drew cry automatically goes into canon.
So the Notebook, Star Trek canon.
The Notebook made you cry?
I think so. No, I don't remember. Cool. It's been a while.
That's cool.
We're learning a lot about each other today.
Yeah.
Maybe we'll do that newlywed game thing that's not the newlywed game that the other hosts are gonna get on.
Yeah, we should do that.
But so we're going to cover the movies. We're gonna go through, let's not just list them because there's only, I assume we're only going to talk about the six of them.
No, I think because we should do all eight.
The whole point was that it led to Undiscovered Country.
Well, it led to the end. So, what's the end? So I think that we should do all eight.
Okay.
All right.
Well, we'll go through them and not just skip around. I think that each one uses a little bit debate.
Yeah.
No, we always do that.
Mm-hmm.
So, let's start right at the beginning. Star Trek, the motion picture.
Yeah, this is a tricky one. Well, first off, I mean, mm-hmm. Do you like it or not?
I'm just going to come out and say it right now. I'm going to fight to keep all of them.
Okay.
And I feel that if we're going by character development, as we've mentioned before, the movies are where the characters really have arcs and get developed, and I feel like all of them are necessary to tell the story of Star Trek.
Okay, so why is motion picture necessary?
I feel like motion picture is necessary because Spock's arc in the movie, while it takes the entire 2.5 hour runtime to get to it, is he's debating on becoming, instead of a half human, half Vulcan, he's going to be a half Vulcan, half human, and really embrace his Vulcan side and purge all of his emotions. But so it's about Spock coming to terms with himself and finding out that through V'ger, in V'ger's quest to be human, that he should keep his humanity, that it's a part of him and that it's an important part of him. And I feel like Spock's story is kind of the arc of the movies, and I feel like this is an important thing to get from Turnabout Intruder, or I guess in our canon, Requiem for Methuselah, to the end, and I think that we should keep it. And also, we don't want to miss out on Bearded McCoy with his giant 70s medallion.
Yeah, I mean, I see what you're saying. At the same time, I think that you could easily lift this out and going from, well, it's not Requiem for Methuselah, it'd be Yesteryear, to Wrath of Khan would be perfectly fine as far as Spock is concerned. This might add an extra dimension to it, but it's not like if you take out motion picture, people aren't going to see the arc. But my thinking with this one is that, you know, it is a decent movie. It's not a great movie by any stretch of the imagination, but they're doing a lot of cool stuff in here. And it doesn't really detract from anything else in the series. So I don't really see any reason to get rid of it. I'd say it adds more than it takes away. Mm-hmm. And for that reason, I would say we should keep it.
Yeah, it's not patently offensive, so.
Right. And they do some cool stuff. There's some interesting topics which are, you know, introduced, and it's interesting. It's interesting.
Yeah. So let's do let's say that it's a fan cut of the director's edition. Maybe.
No. You gotta take it whole.
Okay.
Or leave it, you know. And so, yeah.
So which one? We're also going to have to debate this. Well, director's cut or theatrical?
The director's cut, for sure.
Okay.
No doubt.
You would always go director's cut.
I would always go director's cut because this is
what the director intended.
It's art. This is not a democracy. It's a cheerocracy. And the director is the cheer-tater.
Did you just... Does that Bring It On?
It's totally Bring It On, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
So Bring It On is going to be the second movie in our canon. No.
Bring It On should be in every canon. I mean, come on. That movie's
amazing.
It didn't
make me cry. It's not canon.
Like, seriously, though? I mean, if anyone hasn't seen Bring It On, if you're looking for an extremely smart satire, Bring It On. It's freaking amazing.
I'm
better than most Star Trek movies.
I'm sure that I've seen it, but I don't think I saw it as satire. But I will watch it again for. I'm sure I'll enjoy it more than other movies you've read.
You've gotta prepare for Ant-Man. I mean, if anyone wants to know why I'm looking forward to Ant-Man more than just about anything else this summer, it's because it's from the director of Bring It On. You know?
Really?
Absolutely. Huh. I cannot wait. It's gonna be awesome. Anyway.
Cool. Well, then I'll definitely have to watch it then.
Yeah. And Kirsten Dunst is in it, and she's a Star Trek alum, right?
Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yeah.
Cool beans. All right. So the next movie is Star Trek II, believe it or not, The Wrath of Khan. And I'll go ahead and say that the director's edition, yes, and definitely in the canon.
Yeah. I just saw this Nick DiGilio, who's a critic in Chicago for WGN. He hosts like a monthly movie series or whatever. And this month, in honor of Leonard Nimoy, he did Wrath of Khan. And so I got to see it on the big screen last week. Again, it was pretty awesome.
You did?
Yeah, and seeing it on the big screen sort of reinforced to me how great this movie is, as if I really needed a reminder. But yeah, I mean, this is sort of like the keystone for all Star Trek, at least all original series, I would say, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot of ways where, you know, this has been described to me by my friend back in high school. He was like, you know, it's basically like Star Trek issue zero, you know? Where, like, you can come into Wrath of Khan and know nothing about Star Trek, and you are introduced to all the characters, everything, and, you know, it's sort of like the perfect entry point for viewers. And, yeah, there's no reason not to have it in there at all. I'd throw out pretty much everything else before I lost Wrath of Khan, so.
Yeah, I agree. Wrath of Khan is, we get a lot of deep issues about aging, about finding your place, making sacrifices. I mean, it's a great movie and can really, like, teach you a lot about not only what Star Trek can do, but it can, like, teach you a thing or two. You can take it home and learn from it.
Yeah, and it also is sort of, to me at least, the jumping off point in terms of the continuity for the movies, a lot more so than motion picture.
Yeah. So Star Trek II, definitely keeping.
Yes.
Next up is Star Trek III.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the search for Spock.
Yep. I wonder if they'll find him.
I don't know. He directed the movie.
There he is behind the camera. Oh.
Ha-ha! I found him. He's over there. But Star Trek III, I know that you have a lot of issues with Star Trek III.
Mm-hmm.
But I think storytelling-wise, we need to keep it. And it has a lot of good character moments. I like the whole Ocean's 11, everybody's got their own job to do in order to break McCoy out and steal the Enterprise. Yeah, I like the idea of McCoy dealing with his, not nemesis, but his, you know, like his rival being in his head. And I'd say that we should keep it.
Yeah. See, here's the thing about it. Like, if Star Trek VI weren't as good as it is, I would probably make the argument that Star Trek II should be the end, because Star Trek III does so much wrong in terms of its relationship to Star Trek II, which is, I mean, that's the thing that I've always said, like, looking at Star Trek III, I can't say that it's really a bad movie, because if you look at it on its own, as just its own thing, it works really well. It's the problem with it is its place in Star Trek canon, right?
Mm-hmm.
Almost more than any other, it kind of ruins things. It ruins the other things, which is sort of like what this whole exercise has been about. That being said, they decided to take the mistakes of Star Trek III and run with them for the rest of the franchise. And without
that, they
Star
didn't
Trek...
kill him off again at the beginning of four,
right? If they would have, oh god, why didn't they do that? That's what they should have done in Star Trek V. They should have killed him off. Oh, then we could have lost anyway. But because they didn't do that, we need it in order to get to Star Trek VI, you know?
That's very interesting that your love of Star Trek VI is causing you to keep other things. In reality, we could have just ended it, too.
You could just end it at Wrath of Khan, but as good of an ending as Wrath of Khan would be, I think Star Trek VI is a better ending. So
we basically have to keep three.
Yeah, we have to keep three, whether we want to or not.
All right. Okay. With I will take your complaint under advisement.
Okay.
But Star Trek III is staying.
Yes.
Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm gonna want to keep it because I really enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't want to not have it around. The Voyage Home from three isn't really the important.
No, if Star Trek IV was a piece of crap, you could get rid of it. You'd have to still explain why Kirk is a captain later on, but
and where the new Enterprise came from.
That's true. So, yeah, maybe you do need it. But regardless of that, I mean, Star Trek IV is a really good movie, so why would you get rid of it? Right?
Yeah.
So we're keeping that one.
So we'll keep that one. No alternate versions to worry about, but...
Yeah, and Star Trek IV, that was the movie which I wished they would have shown last week instead of Star Trek II.
Yeah,
but
he directed it.
Yeah, but I think he wasn't aware that Nimoy had directed it. He wasn't a big Star Trek fan, the critic who was hosting
still,
the screening.
If you Google Leonard Nimoy.
Yeah. I think
the man only directed like four movies.
You know, I think kind of the gut reaction is just like, well, Star Trek II, because that's the best movie and that's the one where he dies, you know.
Yeah, well, why don't we not have that one?
Yeah.
And show him dying, and why don't we have a fun one?
You could do that, yeah.
That he had input in.
Yeah. Oh well.
All right. But yeah, Star Trek IV, I enjoy. Again, we've got the kind of Ocean's 11 teamwork. Everybody has a job to do, which I enjoy. I enjoy it when everybody has a job to do. even Chekhov, as annoying as Chekhov's story is in this movie, I don't understand the whole falling and getting hurt and his brain expanding. I don't know.
No, it's fun, though.
Yeah, right? You do get the hospital scene. The hospital breakout is the best part.
Yeah.
Damn medievalism.
Yep. It's good stuff.
All right, so Star Trek 4, staying. Star Trek 5, The Final Frontier?
Mm-hmm.
Question mark? I said that I was going to fight to keep all of them in. Star Trek 5, I think, because it's an independent story and doesn't really need to tell the story between 4 and 6, I think it could go. However, we would miss some good character moments, like the camping out stuff.
That's true. And on the whole, I think that this is a decent movie, but there's some stuff in here which does seem to kind of contradict what has come before and sort of muddies some stuff which doesn't necessarily need to be muddied. So I would make the argument that this one should go. I mean, there's the whole thing with, well, Spock's brother.
Spock's brother.
And then,
yeah, I forgot about that.
And then there's the whole thing, the line which annoys the crap out of me, you know, where Kirk says, I had a brother, or Kirk says, I lost a brother once. I was lucky that I got him back. Yeah. You know, you lost another brother too, dude. I don't know if you forgot about that. I don't know if we kept that one. That was Operation Annihilate, right?
We did not keep Operation Annihilate.
Probably for the same reason that I'm suggesting getting rid of Star Trek V now, but regardless.
Did we get rid of Operation Annihilate to keep 5? I don't think so. I think I would remember that.
Maybe. I don't know. But regardless, I mean, is there anything that this thing adds to it? And it does complicate stuff. So I would say let's get rid of number 5.
All right. And I'll agree. It's not a terrible movie.
Mm-hmm.
It's just not a good Star Trek movie. It's a bad Star Trek movie. But it's an all right movie.
Yeah, someone's going to have to explain that to me at some point. Like, that was sort of like criticism number one of Star Trek 09. It's a good movie. It's just not a good Star Trek movie.
Well, I'm not talking about, like, Star Trek as a concept, like 2009, and we can have this argument in a few minutes.
Uh-huh.
Or this discussion. But I'm saying that if you're ranking Star Trek movies, 5 is going to be at the bottom.
Okay,
but if you're ranking movies, 5 is going to be somewhere in the middle of all movies.
I see what you're saying, yes.
Right.
That's kind of what I've been saying about Avengers Age of Ultron. It's good. It's just one of the worst Marvel Cinematic Universe movies.
And that's how I feel about, like, my bottom few in my Marvel list, is that it's like, these aren't bad movies. They're just not good Marvel movies. And not that they're Marvel has a movie thing. Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
Okay.
Right. So 5, we'll get rid of.
Let's get rid of it, yeah.
All right, so 6, I mean, 6 doesn't reference 5, but so we're good there. We could just go from Kirk getting the Enterprise, my friends, we've come home, to Praxis exploding.
Yeah.
Time has moved on, Sulu is, we're obviously keeping it, so we'll just talk about it. Sulu is in command of a ship. It's not like that happens in 5 that we need to see that.
No. I mean, let's face facts. Do we really think that Nicholas Meyer saw 5? Probably not. I'm guessing
that's
not.
Probably a good point.
So, yeah.
Has he ever seen 5? This is a good question. So, Star Trek 6, definitely keeping it. Okay. Director's cut versus theatrical. This one. What do we get? What do we add in Director's Cut? We get Odo, which is weird. We get more Odo.
Mm-hmm.
And we get the flashes of identification of the, what I call the Scooby-Doo ending. And I think others call it that too. Where it's just like, the Romulan Ambassador. Ambassador.
Yeah, that's the one thing which bothers me, you know? We do get Scotty saying a very weird, crazy line where he's like, I bet that Klingon bitch killed her father.
Oh, yeah.
Where you're just like, wait, what? So that's
she didn't shed one fun. Tear.
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize that was a director's cut thing.
I'm pretty sure.
Well, now we have to keep it.
Yeah. Although, is the tear duct thing in the director's cut or not?
I think the tear duct thing may be in the theatrical.
Because that's contradicted like crazy in Next Gen and Deep Space Nine.
Oh, no.
Klingons are crying all the freaking time. They're a bunch of like, whiny babies.
We're not keeping canon with Next Generation. F Next Generation.
Okay.
We're keeping canon with itself. And if itself establishes that Klingons have pink blood and no tear ducts, then Klingons have pink blood and no tear ducts.
Yeah. Yeah.
Pepto-Bismol blood.
Right. So, I mean, yes. I mean, Star Trek VI, this is the best of all of the original series adventures, you know? I mean, in the prime timeline, at least.
Mm-hmm.
It's also the perfect ending to the series.
Yeah.
This is
they literally fly off into the sunset.
Yeah.
Or the sun.
Yeah.
It's not really setting because it's just standing there.
Yeah. I mean, this is the finale they deserved and all that stuff. And it's awesome. So we got to keep it.
Yeah, we absolutely have to keep it.
Yeah.
And everybody signs their name to the end of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. So
I made this joke on our commentary, but I'm going to say it again.
Yeah.
Just
I mean,
because it's funny. But I'm wondering how much William Shatner charged the movie to sign it at the end.
It's normal rate of $90.
I'm guessing that's what it was, right? Yeah. Anyway, moving on.
Oh, that's funny.
So, the end.
Generations is right out.
Yeah, that doesn't really count. I mean, we could talk about like the episodes in which, you know, the crew come in and other incarnations or whatever, but you know, maybe that's we'll see how much time we have left at the end. We can
We'll save that for another episode. How about that?
So is Star Trek VI the end or not? Because now we have Star Trek 2009. Okay. So what do you think?
So if we accept Star Trek 2009 in our canon. Now, just because we don't have it in canon doesn't mean that we can't watch it and enjoy it. But old Spock, I don't know. If we take the elements of the prime timeline that come forward, old Spock handing off the torch and stuff, I don't know. I don't think it's necessary to tell the story of the movie that we already established was the end.
Yeah. I'm kind of in agreement here. I mean, I do go back to like what I just said about Star Trek II, where it's like, well, I'd get rid of everything else before I got rid of Star Trek II. And, you know, I mean, I kind of feel that way about Star Trek '09. At the same time, I might have told this story before. I don't remember.
That's fine.
There's this documentary called The Cutting Edge about the art of editing. It's awesome. If you have any interest in editing, you should watch it. You can find it on the Bullet Blu-ray of all places. I don't know why. And
okay.
In that documentary, they talk to Walter Murch, legendary editor and sound designer, you know, and everything like that. Worked on Apocalypse Now and The Godfather 3 and all these other things. It won Oscars and, yeah, anyway, friends with George Lucas, whatever. Anyway, so in there he talks about how he was editing this one movie. I think it was like Julia. I forget which movie it was. I think it was like Philip Kaufman, the guy who co-wrote Raiders of the Lost Ark, was directing. I think. Could be wrong. Doesn't matter. Anyway, he was talking about how there was this one big sequence in the movie, and it was just kind of dragging and everything like that, and they were editing the movie, and the movie felt like it was dragging, and Murch turned to the director and said, you know, I think we should lose this sequence. And the director was like, okay, let's do it. And Murch is like, all right, we're doing it. And just as he's about to break the splice, the director says, you know, when I read this scene in the script, that's when I knew I could make this movie. And Murch is like, so we're leaving it? And the director's like, no, get rid of it, you know? And he pulls it out of there, you know? And then it made the movie better, you know? And, like, Murch's whole point was, like, that scene served its purpose. Its purpose was to get this director on the movie so that he could make the rest of the movie. But now we don't need that scene anymore, and we can pull it out. And sometimes you got to make those hard choices, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that's the hard choice that we have to make here. Star Trek 09, for me anyway, I'm sure that's not a very hard choice for you. But Star Trek 09, while it is a great thing, if we're looking at all of this on the whole is better if Star Trek 09 is gone. So,
yes. But it's good that it's there because it got, like you said, that sequence brought that director in. And yeah. And it's good that 2009 exists because it's bringing in other new fans. For example, Celeste has been talking this week on Twitter. Hool Quinn, HOOLEQUINN.
I think it's Hooley Quinn, right? Like Harley Quinn? Hooley Quinn?
Oh.
I don't know.
Well, now everything makes more sense. But she said that she got excited about Star Trek 2009. Like she saw a documentary about Star Trek, and she's like, I should go see that new movie. And she watched it and loved it, and watched it again, and then watched it again, and then watched it 17 additional times.
Yeah,
in theaters. So she saw it 20 times in theaters.
Yeah,
and then she went through a list of kind of like ours of the top best episodes of Star Trek and the worst episodes of Star Trek, and now she's filling in the gaps. I mean, 2009 is bringing in new fans.
And it's awesome on its own, you know?
Yes.
It could be a canon of one.
Ah, but it's not a canon of one because we also have Into Darkness, which I wouldn't keep if... Because that would be really hard to be like, here's a Star Trek movie. Everybody's young. Don't question it.
Yeah.
There's old Spock. Don't question it.
Khan is white. Don't question
it. Khan is white. Don't question it.
Yeah.
So we can't keep Into Darkness either.
Which no.
Is kind of disappointing.
Yeah.
But who knows? Maybe 3 will be be able to stand on its own.
No, but I mean, that's what I was just thinking, though, too, is like, who knows? Maybe 3 will be like an ending to that trilogy, which will somehow tie it all together. And then maybe after 3 comes out, or 13, or beyond, or whatever you want to call it, then maybe after that, we can take a look at this again and say, like, okay, Star Trek 09 and Into Darkness do belong in the canon, along with Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah, I don't know about that title, you guys.
I like the title. It's a very, very Batman title. Batman Forever. Star Trek Beyond.
Exactly, it's a very Batman title.
I love that. Love it.
Star Trek and Robin.
We don't need to specify things. Star Trek, the one with Idris Elba as the bad guy where they're in space and it's gonna... No.
So Friends episodes.
Star Trek Beyond. It's majestic.
Well, thanks to my Google spreadsheet that I've been keeping of our canon episodes, I can now give us the final totals.
All right, let's hear this.
So here we go. From season 1, we kept 19 episodes out of the 30. Yeah. So that's 63.33% of season 1.
Okay.
Of season 2, we kept 11 out of the 26, which is 42.31.
Lower than I'd expect, but okay.
From season 3, we kept 8 out of 24, which is 33.33.
That's a lot higher than I would have expected.
Yeah. So the original series, we kept 38 out of 80 episodes for 47.5%.
Not bad. It's more than I thought.
From the animated series, we kept 1 out of 22, which is 4.55%.
That's exactly right.
From the movies, we kept 5 out of the 8 for 62.5%.
Seems reasonable.
All right, now get this.
Mm-hmm.
The total out of 110 adventures, we kept 44, which is exactly 40%.
Excellent. Excellent. Not bad. I mean, less is more, right?
Exactly. Less is more. And I'm pretty sure we could get it down to 40 if we really, like, trimmed a couple of season one episodes.
Well, 44. Break that down into two 22-episode seasons. Perfect.
Oh, here we go.
Yeah.
Good work, us.
Yeah. I'm sure that we're going to hear all sorts of stuff about this, but yeah. Maybe on the Babel conference, we should put actually put out the full list so that people can read it easily and comment.
I will do that when the episode drops.
Cool.
Well, it was fun talking about and finishing up our personal canon today, but that's just one of the Trek topics we've been talking about on Trek FM this week. Here's a quick look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
The Vulcans came. Maybe it's a Vulcan Thanksgiving. The Vulcans came to Earth, and we gave them corn.
Okay. No, we gave them whiskey.
Well, I mean, corn whiskey, then.
Okay.
Ah.
All right.
Ah, there
All right.
we go.
Cool.
The Orb.
I'd like to see the Borg assimilate Ferenginar, and then they would become bankers. You know, I could see...
Oh, my gosh.
I could see
bankers.
Drones. Yeah, yeah.
The world's strictest bank ever.
Yeah, right.
I'm sorry, you have not paid your loan. You will be assimilated.
The nanites go into you.
Yes.
The Ready Room.
Oh, man. I can see, instead of Kirk, it's Mike Ditka throughout the entire
episode. He's just, like, chewing the whole time. Like, yeah. Edith Keeler must... die.
Oh, she's gotta die.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
The theme song, I mean, I guess it's cool. The thing that I was kind of struck by was the opening title sequence itself.
Yeah, it makes no sense.
It's literally like all three of them are running for their lives.
The 602 Club.
But I loved the scene with Lucy and Tumnus when they first meet, because mm-hmm. that's a very yeah. vivid description in the book, and I felt like they really nailed that in terms of the way it looked, and the CGI was advanced enough so that James McAvoy really looked like he had fawn legs. And
Literary Treks.
Tell us about coming up with this story for the crew of the Enterprise. Where did it come from for you, and what were some of your inspirations for diving into these characters once again?
Well, Troublesome Minds was such a book that it left me with, as if I didn't quite finish. I'd come up with Troublesome Minds as an idea. The idea was, what pushes Spock toward Kolinar?
Axanar, the official podcast.
There is more to life then just get up, go to work, come home, watch TV, go to bed, repeat until dead. There's more to life than that. And I believe that that's the essential magic of Star Trek, is that it says, it appeals to that urge to get up off the couch, walk out the front door, and go see what's out there.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out these shows and get in on the daily Trek talk. You'll find them on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker, SoundCloud, or you can just stream from the website. Just visit Trek.fm/podcast to get all the links. We have an email from Renee Imres on Twitter. She's from Germany, and she says, "Thank you guys for a lovely commentary on Assignment Earth. It was a wonderful podcast episode, and Andy's reactions were priceless. I hope you can get her back on again soon." Well, you will have had in between now and then. I'm going to check out Women at Warp 2. I have loved this episode ever since I started watching Trek in 1968. I can't believe it's been 47 years. I was just a wee kitty back then, of course. And despite the many flaws that I've come to recognize over the years, it will always have a very special place in my heart. For instance, how in the world was Kirk able to record a captain's log while being held under guard in mission control? Well, yeah, I have a problem with that too. Was there a chip implanted in his brain? I know it was for dramatic effect, but still, it always makes me smile. Also, I greatly doubt that anyone with Gary's training would have automatically assumed that the person walking into the office was one of his own agents. After all, hadn't he met 201 and 347 before? I know the scene was played for comedy, and I kind of like that, but I really don't think it was necessary. Obviously, they wanted to introduce Roberta and perhaps make Gary more relatable due to fallibility, but I think they could have done that in a way that didn't make them both look silly. Yet I happily overlook these and other writing flaws because I love the episode so much. Just like Andy, I've always loved Isis. Ninja Cat is the perfect term for her. In my head canon, she's telepathic, as she can obviously communicate with Gary, and distracts Spock by subliminally touching his mind. And she's probably attracted to his high intelligence. So see, her behavior was perfectly logical. Oh, goodness. I, too, always wondered how the Assignment Earth series would have turned out if the network had picked it up. Several years ago, I happened upon Assignment Eternity and The Eugenics Wars, The Rise and Fall of Khan, Noonien, and Singh, Volumes 1 and 2, all by Greg Cox. Space Bond, or as I like to call him, Gary 007, really comes into his own here, as do Roberta and Isis. I like to imagine that the series would have turned out something like that. I highly recommend them, especially if you want to see the origin of Khan! The Eugenics Wars volumes are also available on Audible, by the way. Thank you for that. Fairly recently, I decided to check out Doctor Who for the first time when another podcast mentioned the similarities to Assignment Earth, so it was actually Gary 7 that got me hooked on the Doctor. Here, I feel rather like Andy must be with Star Trek, since I have 50 years of the Whoniverse to catch up on, but I'm loving it. Enough ramblings now, though. Thanks for an excellent podcast. Cheers, Imres, a.k.a. Renee.
Well, thanks, Renee. Really appreciate that. Yeah, and there is also the comic book, which was written by John Byrne.
Which is written by John Byrne, thank you very much.
So yeah, if you'd like some further adventures of Gary 7, he was in an issue of the DC comic as well, I remember that. I remember it was a big deal because like they kept on like obscuring his face or something like that, and everyone's like, what's wrong? What are you doing with this face? And they're like, well, we didn't have the rights to the actor's likeness, so we had to kind of, you know.
Like the likenesses in those DC comics are anything accurate to begin with.
Yeah, yeah. Some of them were good. I don't know. I grew up with the DC comics, so I have a soft spot for those.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Well, if you'd like to share your thoughts on today's show and on our canon, share your personal canon, you can go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose Send a Show and choose Standard Orbit. That'll come to both of us by email. You can also use the tab in the left-hand column of any page to send us a voicemail using your webcam's microphone. And you can talk to us and our other listeners at our Facebook group, The Babel Conference. In social media, you'll find our Facebook page at facebook.com/trekfm and on Twitter under username trekfm. Mike, where can people find you out of orbit?
You can find me right here on Trek FM doing commentary Trek Stars with John and Max. And you can also find me on commentarytrekstars.com. Doing commentary Track Stars Off Topic and commentary Track Star Babies with Max and Brandon. And then you can also find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K.
And you can find me on Twitter at 005, DOUBLEOFIVE, and on various other places around the internet under that same name. We have another iTunes review here from Tanada 1945. And it says, entertaining and informative. Aha!
Yeah, see, we got the entertaining thing there. Yeah, we're improving.
Love this podcast. I have no special love for JJ Trek, but if it brought hosts like this into the TOS world, it can't be all bad either. Love being exposed to TOS through their point of view. Drew has something good to say about almost everything Trek, and Mike is very helpful and friendly talking about the technical aspects of TV and movie making.
Yep, I do not have something good to say about all aspects of Trek.
This is true.
But yeah, I wouldn't say that 09 brought us together. What we've said before is like there would be no Trek FM without 09 because 09 sparked or reignited the interest in Star Trek amongst fans. And that sort of brought everyone together. But yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
It didn't bring me to Trek, but it certainly brought us together through the network.
Yeah. Yeah.
And if you'd like to leave a review on iTunes, we'd really appreciate that. Their magical ranking system takes reviews into account somehow. So if you want to give us a bunch of cool reviews, that'd be really cool.
Yeah.
Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor, who helps us bring Standard Orbit to you each week, and our sponsor for the show is Audible.com. Audible's a great way for you to read all the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have time for. Audible's the premier source for audiobooks, more than 150,000 titles to choose from, and new titles coming every week. From classics to current bestsellers and even some of those famous Star Trek books like Prime Directive and Federation, Audible has something for everyone. Mike, what do you have for everyone?
Well, I've got a movie adaptation, one which, for a movie which we did not include in this canon, but, you know, they don't have the ones that we did include, so what can you do? And that's Star Trek. It's written by Alan Dean Foster.
Oh.
Who wrote one of the movies that we did keep. You know, he wrote the motion picture, so.
Oh, there's that.
And is narrated by Zachary Quinto. It's a little over 8 hours long, unabridged. In the far reaches of the galaxy, a machine of war bursts into existence. It's not really a machine of war.
These descriptions for these new Star Trek movies are the worst.
In a place and time it was never meant to be, on a mission of retribution for the destruction of his planet, its half-mad captain seeks the death of every intelligent being and the annihilation of every civilized world. Not really, just two.
No.
Just two.
Well, I mean, he was going to go then knock out the Federation, so I assumed, okay, he was going to go to wherever Tellarites are from, Tellar, I guess, and okay, Andoria.
But
he would have Earth a fight on his hands if he went to Andoria.
Yeah. Earth and Vulcan were the two main ones, though, right?
Right.
Okay. Kirk and Spock, two completely different and unyielding personalities, must find a way to lead the only crew aboard the only ship that can stop them. And you can
dun, dun, dun.
Yep. And you can get this book for free since you listen to Trek FM.
That's right. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial just to see how great Audible is. So give it a try today, catch up on all those classic Star Trek books you get to read, and that latest novel from your favorite author as well. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Standard Orbit and Trek FM. I'm disappointed that we did not keep the Into Darkness streak going that I suggested last week.
Well, maybe next time.
All right. We'd also like to thank Richard Rutledge Jr. for being our associate producer. He supports us on Patreon, and you can find him at RUT8972 on Twitter. If you want to join him in keeping us in orbit, you can go to patreon.com/trekfm, and you'll find a list of donation levels where you can get things like exclusive digital goodies, early access to episodes, access to our project manager, and even be listed as associate producer for our shows. You find out where the donations can go, things like covering the monthly cost of hosting and distribution, hiring an editor for our shows, and upgrading our equipment. Again, that's patreon.com/trekfm, so check it out. Well, that was fun. We're going to have to find excuses to keep more things in canon, because I enjoy our debates on the episodes.
Yeah, it's good. Yep, maybe we'll have to look at the stuff from the other shows that include TOS characters,
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, we'll get on that.
Yeah.
Well, everybody, thanks for listening. Have a good week and keep on trekking. It is the will of Landru.
Mr. Chekov, take us out of orbit ahead, warp factor 1.
Hi, sir.
Thank you.